Today FM's Dermot and Dave.
Well, it was pretty childish on Grafton Street this weekend. It marked 1 year since the first case of COVID-19 was confirmed in the Republic of Ireland. We saw the anger of some Irish people as chaos descended on Dublin City Centre. As Sean Defoe is Today FM's political correspondent, he has spent the past year covering the biggest story in the modern history of the state. But covering these stories comes with another side. And we're joined by Sean to chat about that. Morning, Sean.
Morning, guys. I do wish I could get away with wearing sweatpants at all, but so far, still frowned upon.
Have any of the politicians turned up in civvies, or are they just always in a suit?
No, well, you do sometimes. Some of them cycle in, and you see them coming in the cycle gear and then, like, walking up to their office. So it's really strange. Like, Gino Kenny comes in his bomber jacket and his cycle pants and goes up. And a few others then who you see, and they kind of, like, actively avoid your eyes and run past you until they can get into the suit.
And sure, Leo's no stranger to a bit of Under Armour.
No, well, the best one of Leo was when he was a minister, before he was Taoiseach, and he used to arrive to the cabinet meetings in his gym gear and get changed in government buildings. So we'd be waiting outside in the cold on Merrion Street, and kind of, you know, his Merc or BMW, I think he had at the time, would go past us into the gates, and then he'd get out in the shorts and T-shirt with the gym bag with the suit inside it, you know?
Right.
They're people as well. Who would have thought?
Yeah.
Come here, talk about the weekend before we get into your own experience of being a reporter in COVID, which is fascinating. And we want to get to that. But obviously, Gardaí arrested 23 people after a protest against lockdown measures in Dublin turned violent. How many of the crowd do you think were, you know, regular Joes? Maybe they own a business. Maybe they're fed up. They wanted to go in, express their opinion, get their voice heard, try and do it in a socially distant way if they could. And how many were just these loons who attached themselves onto anything where they can chuck a firework at a guard?
Yeah, I'm not sure what the split of it was. I think it certainly seems like there were more average Joes there than there had been before, because there have been these kind of groups that have been protesting away throughout the lockdown. We've seen them at other places outside the forecourts, and they were outside the Dáil for a bit at one time last year. And they were very, very small in number. I mean, you're talking kind of anywhere from 5 to maybe a maximum of 20. Obviously, there were a lot more people, and that does, I think, reflect the anger that everyone is feeling at the moment, but that some people who are really, really being pushed to the collar. I still don't think the majority of people, as much as we were all under that sort of pressure, would think to go out and launch a firework at a guard or start any sort of violent stuff. And there may have been some people who have just been kind of taken in by it. You know, this is the big danger of it, that there are people who are kind of vulnerable at the moment. They might be home on their own, their business might be closed, really struggling. And that's when these kind of radical groups do get into people's heads, because what they're peddling a lot of the time is very populist. It sounds if you're looking for a way out, or if you're looking for an excuse or a change to your life, that's what they peddle, and that's how they get you. So it does look as though they've gotten a few more people on board with that kind of thing, but you would hope that it would stop at that, and that a lot of people would see the sense in it, that while, okay, have your feelings about what the way the government is doing things, we all have the right to be angry, I think, at the way things have been handled, but there is a way to go about protesting that, and it is not putting other people's lives in danger or endangering the public health in general.
It was a nice bit of irony, though, you know, when you are an anti-masker and you're throwing something at a guard, because you're anti-mask, it's very easy to identify you on CCTV. Yeah.
That was the big help in the Capitol protest as well, wasn't it, that they actually were able to identify all these people because they weren't clever enough or maybe were actually mentally against covering up their face in the first place.
Yeah. Do you have to go into potentially dangerous situations like that and cover it, or are you able to watch from afar like most of us and then report on it at a later date?
No, well, thankfully, with that kind of thing, I didn't have to go in, certainly at the weekend. Luckily, I was off at the weekend, and you would obviously try to avoid that. It can be debatable. Like, we did certainly think during the absolute worst of this, you know, is it safe to be going into the Dáil? Is it safe to be going into other workplaces like that? Thankfully, not now out onto the streets or anything. And there's been a huge amount of work put in around Leinster House and in the convention centre to make sure that it is safe. But there have been times when there's been those kind of protests outside the Dáil. You're trying to walk in and those groups are there, they're shouting, they're trying to get towards your face, and it's that point you kind of feel like, Jesus, all right, I need to avoid this here. Yeah. And try to get away. But on that front, it hasn't been too bad, because luckily there hasn't been too many of those big events that you might be sent into, you know.
Don't shoot the messenger is a well-known phrase. It doesn't always apply these days, particularly in your role, and particularly when people's backs are up about one thing or another, whether it's COVID or whether it's elections or any water charges, whatever it is. How has being a reporter in COVID been, and how much abuse or that kind of negative interaction do you get?
Quite a bit. Not as much as some of my colleagues do. Not as much as female reporters have. I think whatever, I do get abuse on, maybe not a daily basis, certainly a weekly basis for things. But it seems to be much worse with female reporters on Twitter in particular. And some of our colleagues in Today FM have got it. Some of our colleagues in the rest of the media have got it. Whereas if I'd said the same thing, it might have been, you know, a smaller deal. I think a lot of people are really, definitely the anger has been dialed up in the last year, fairly understandably, given the way everything is for everybody. And they just kind of tend to take it out on whoever they see the messenger being, be it myself on Twitter or someone else on air. You get the texts about it, you get the tweets about it, or whatever.
So when you kind of, you know, when there's bad news, let's say, you know, if the government say, you know, X, Y, and Z, and you report that as a, you know, disembodied third voice, like going, this is what is happening. Do people get confused and think you're the one saying that this is happening?
Some people do. Yes, genuinely some people do. And they'll be like, oh, that's a terrible, you know, you're absolutely stupid for saying that. And I'm like, well, I didn't say that. And it was someone else who said it entirely. I'm just passing it on.
The clue is in the title, reporter. I'm reporting this.
Or the in the tweet, Leo Varadkar said, not Sean Defoe said, but some people don't 100% get that all the time. You kind of get a few mixed reactions to this. Some people like that. Then you get a lot of people obviously quote tweeting it or replying who are just angry at whatever was said, and that's, you know, that's absolutely fine. And then there's other people who are like, well, why would you report this? Why would you put this out there when everyone is already depressed? And they're like, well, it's, you know, it's, you might not want to pay attention to it, but you can unfollow me or not read what I say or say on air. But it is important to report what's going on as well, and to have that out there, as much as we might like to disengage from it and not really hear it either.
Do people think that you're part of a larger media conspiracy? And obviously the word conspiracy has never been used more often than it is now in all news. And in, you know, it could be conspiracy to do with Big Pharma, our food, our COVID.
Red carpet, like they said in the Golden Globes.
Yeah, our Golden Globes. It could be anything, but conspiracy is just a word that's just used a lot more than it has been traditionally in the past. Can you see that being used in tweets and messages towards you?
Yeah, there's definitely a bit of that, and usually it's followed by a very quick mute or block from myself when it does come along, because you just, like, you know, you're not going to have a reasoned debate with those kind of people, but you do definitely get it, and people are like, oh, well, you're part of the conspiracy, what are you covering up, you're hiding this, you're not talking about this or that or the other. And some of that is, you know, genuine people thinking we're not putting enough effort on to look at, it's always what everything is important to them, you know. So it's like, why is nobody talking about golf courses being open, why is nobody talking about this, that or the other, or why is nobody talking about antigen testing? And some of that could be fair, but then it does go into, you always get in usually a reply to that, some other account, always anonymous, usually seems to be male, and when you can tell whatever kind of a name that they have on it, and they're like, oh, well, of course, you know, this is a part of the George Soros far left hard right conspiracy media group that is all putting this together. And it's all, you do just wonder what people who genuinely believe that, because there are some people who are just trying to sow a bit of fear or sow a bit of discord, and then there are some people who actually believe that, and you kind of wonder, how did you get to that point in your head?
A lot of people who are very affected by lockdowns and restrictions and closed businesses do feel that the media has only given one side of COVID and the approach to COVID. As a reporter who is always impartial and is sort of at the front line of where the news comes from, do you think the narrative has been one-sided, and do you think people have been silenced in any way?
I think the narrative has kind of flipped quite a bit, and it tends to be one-sided on any given day, because that's just the way that news goes. You know, whatever story is going to be big today, today might be antigen testing, for example, because there's a government report coming out on that. So we're all probably for the next 2 days going to talk a bit about antigen testing, why we're not using it more, using it in the schools, etc. But then it does tend to flip, and it often flips with the public mood, because that's what the media is trying to do a lot of the time, is reflect the public mood. So they're trying to, you know, sell papers, obviously, get listeners and talk what people are talking about. So the one that I can kind of feel creeping back in now is the same one that we had in November, where people are really, really fed up, completely understandably, been in lockdown for a long time. And now they're saying, well, why don't we open up? You know, your man, Paul Trevor, who I think you talked to on the show last week again.
Restaurant owner from Kerry, yeah.
Yeah, and who has huge anger, obviously, but you have to balance that with the public health advice as well. You know, obviously we'd all love to open up. We'd love to open up the restaurants. We'd love to open up all those individual sectors I talked about before that people are wanting to know about and kind of have their own interest in. But then you do have to balance it on the public health side. So I think at the start, there probably was an element of not really challenging what NPHET and the government said, because we were all learning so much about this. It was all so new in the first wave of lockdown. But I think, to be fair, every press conference they do, every time there is an announcement, it is very thoroughly interrogated from all different angles. And you try to do your best on it. But when the thing I find is when you get to those press conferences, the ones that people will have watched, like last Tuesday, the big announcement, you can only ask so many questions. And even if, you know, I asked three questions, I didn't get near to the amount that I wanted to ask, and all sorts of people messaging me on Twitter, and you get through the however many seven or eight journalists are in the room, you're just not going to cover everything, because this affects all of society, because absolutely everything is affected at lockdown. So then you get people saying, well, no one is talking about this, no one is asking about this. And okay, we didn't, but it's not because we didn't want to, it's because we didn't have the time or didn't have the ability to go beyond an hour-long press conference.
And Sean, when you do get abusive text messages and you do get, you know, abuse hurled at you in the street, whatever, how do you feel about that kind of thing?
It kind of depends on the day. There's days I'm very good at tuning it out and just absolutely, you know, mute the comment and block it from my head. But then I find some of the stuff, particularly when it gets personal, and like you get some messages that are completely nothing to do with anything. I remember one I got last week was just said, "You're a disgrace." And there was no other, there was no context to it. There was no, it wasn't in reply to anything. It was just a DM, "You're a disgrace." And you're like, What was that about? And then you block it and you kind of move on. But then the rest of the day I was going, what did I do that made me a disgrace? You know, why am I a disgrace? It does stick in your head.
Of course,
you know,
it does. Really, oh, annoying. Yeah.
Really annoying. So it is mentally tough. I kind of have a certain, at this stage, resistance to it. The bit I find difficult is when then my family and my loved ones do also view that as well. My mom is on Twitter, as much as I tell her not to be on Twitter, with the sole purpose of viewing my tweets and some of the replies, and gets awful upset about them, which isn't great. I have to kind of calm her down if I haven't seen something or I've muted it, you know.
Does it help if she weighs into the argument saying, leave my boy alone?
Oh, absolutely not. She did once. She did once, and it went it went very badly. Whoever it was just started attacking her, then calling her all sorts of names. And that upset me a bit more. And I'd
say
like, right,
so. Of course it was. Well, Sean Defoe, you are doing a sterling job, a very difficult job, and one we don't envy you having. But listen, you're doing a brilliant job for Today FM as political correspondent. And we thank you for your clarity and your dedication and your consistent reporting of everything that's going on. It's not Sean that's doing it. It's just Sean that's telling you about it. Okay?
Yeah. Don't shoot the messenger, TM, please.
All right, Sean. Thanks so much for talking to us. See you later. Bye-bye. Cheers.
Dermot and Dave. Listen live on air from 9 a.m. weekdays on Today FM.